As much as we hate the expression your authentic self, there is something to that where it's really about just being honest and being truthful and being comfortable sharing your own personal vulnerability and honesty and authenticity in the workplace in an appropriate way and one that resonates with your target audience, whoever that may be.
Hey, it's David, and you're listening to Leadership Without Losing Your Soul, your source for practical leadership inspiration, tools, and strategies you can use to achieve transformational results without sacrificing your humanity or your mind in the process.
Hey, welcome to the show. This is a great way to start season 15 of Leadership Without Losing Your Soul, and we're going to kick off season 15 with two fantastic guests, not one, but two, and for the first time ever in the history of this show, we have a stand-up comic on the show who is going to help us with leadership. And not one funny person, but two. Well, we're going to see if they're funny. I don't know. We'll find out. Steve Cody, co-author of the book called The ROI of LOL, is the CEO and founder of the PR agency Peppercom. And that's a strategic communications agency he named in honor of his late Black Lab Pepper, which is such a good name for a black lab. The book's published by HarperCollins Leadership, same publisher that we're using, so it's good to be in company here. And Steve himself is a comedian, climber, and dog lover, but not necessarily in that order, so we're going to find out more about what order. And our second guest today is Clayton Fletcher, New York City-based comedian and chief comedy officer of Peppercom. So definitely first stand-up comedian on the show and first chief comedy officer. All in one sitting here. You can hear Clayton on every day on Sirius XM's Radio Laugh USA, Blue Collar Comedy, Jamie Foxx's Foxhole stations, or catch him performing throughout the U.S., Europe, Asia, Australia, Caribbean. Clayton, I note Antarctica not on the list.
No, unfortunately, the penguins just don't get my jokes.
I tell you, I have. That's the only continent that we have not worked with leaders on. So we're gonna have to have a team up combo thing for to help leaders in Antarctica, one way or the other. All right. Well, Clayton is also co-author of ROI of LOL: How Laughter Breaks Down Walls, Drives Compelling Storytelling, and Creates a Healthy Workplace. Steve, Clayton, welcome to Leadership Without Losing Your Soul. So glad you're here.
It's a pleasure to be with you, David. Thank you.
Absolutely. Well, before we, and I really want to dive into all of the good work you've done around laughter and humor in the workplace and comedy. Before we do that, though, I'd like to ask each of you if you could take us back to your earliest memory of yourself as a leader. And let's see, Steve, why don't we start with you and then we'll go to Clayton.
A leader in the business place?
You get to choose. I was talking with somebody recently who our final guest season 14, she went back to when she was 3 or 4 years old. I think that's the farthest back anybody's ever gone.
Okay.
Others go to age 28. So it's up to you.
I can't match the 3 years of age, but I can do second grade. How's that?
That's pretty good.
So still seared in my brain synapses, but I was in the Cub Scouts and Saturday there was a field trip. God knows where it was too. And I made the mistake of getting on the wrong bus with the wrong den. And I didn't realize it until we were like 45 minutes into the ride. And long story short, we ended up having a softball game against my den. I was playing for the enemy den. And I made a Willie Mays over-the-shoulder catch to save the game. And everybody picked me up on their shoulders and led me off the field. So I led by example.
So the wrong team picked you up on their shoulders, or the right team, I guess, depending on how you look at it. Wow. All right. So performance, you led by example.
Correct.
Fantastic. Love it. You know, that's not something I think you would ever forget. Thanks, Steve. All right, Clayton, over to you.
Well, I don't know if I can top Steve's story, but I will say that when I was in the ninth grade, we had a student join our school in the middle of the school year. And he was blind. I didn't go to a school for the blind, but this was a boy that, you know, felt like he was going to be able to get by, but he was going to need a little help. And they asked us if anyone would be willing to help us get him from one class to the next and things like that. And so, you know, I used to just put my hand up anytime anybody said the word volunteer. I was like, let's go. You know, what is it? I want to learn about this. And so I spent most of my ninth grade year trying to make sure that this other guy, his name was David also. So I tried to help David get from one class to the next. And then as a result of that, they sent me away to a leadership camp where I actually learned that leadership is about being a good follower first. In order to be a good leader, you have to be a good follower. And so that was kind of the early, you know, when you're really young and impressionable, I would say you're 13, 14 years of age, having the word leader thrown at you so consistently like that, oh, you're a real leader for helping the blind kid around the school, and we're going to send you a leadership camp. I started thinking, you know, maybe I can be, you know, good at this. And it's, I mean, it's not as cool as Steve's story, but yeah, it all started with a blind boy in my case.
Well, I think for that kid, it was pretty cool. Absolutely. So leadership is an act of service, and that not something we ever outgrow. You know, Clayton, the other thing that I would call out there for all of us is the importance, and you were saying this for yourself, but the importance of us as leaders, as people of influence, of calling out leadership in other people and calling attention to it and speaking that, because it becomes real for them as we hear that. It becomes real for us is when we're saying it for others, it becomes real for them. There's real power in that, isn't there?
Yeah. I mean, we should all be really careful what we say to ourselves about ourselves, you know, because the brain just kind of responds in a very sort of just reactionary way. So for example, if you say every morning, I'm so bad at remembering names, you know, when you meet somebody, you're like, I'm sorry, I forgot your name. I'm really bad at remembering names. Your brain just kind of latches onto that, like, okay, I'm never going to remember another name in my life. But if you wake up and you say, you know, people like to listen to my ideas, I have good ideas, you know, I'm good at showing people the right and the wrong way to do things, anything like that can kind of just change your mindset, which changes the way your brain responds to you as opposed to you responding to your brain.
That is such helpful advice. That actually is hitting me between the eyes right now, because I've had a good practice of doing that over time, and I have gotten out of the habit lately, and I'm recognizing I would get some value from that if I get back into that. So thank you for that. And listeners, there's a practical takeaway getting started here. All right, so let's dive into the topic here with Steve and Clayton. We're talking about the ROI of LOL. Again, love that title, how fun. How laughter breaks down walls, drives compelling storytelling, and creates a healthy workplace. And I know opening joking about having comedians on the show for the first time and all, but there aren't a lot of books that I have seen about the application of comedy to leadership and to work. And I love what you guys are doing here in terms of opening the door for us on this, that you make this statement in the book that really the book is a compilation of what comedians know that business people should know. And so let's throw that open a little bit here, and you know, at a 50,000 foot level, what is it that comedians know that business people should know? And then we'll dive a little deeper.
Okay. Well, let's let the business guy go first, because that's one of our differentiators, that everything that we do either at my firm or for our client organizations is co-led by a professional comedian and a business executive who can take whatever Clayton says and bring it down to a real world, you know, situation, reality. It's and or share, you know, stories, you know, from my world. So, you know, I did stand up as a one off, you know, it was part of my ongoing midlife crisis, which I've been experiencing since my sophomore year in high school. So, you know, I studied at this American Comedy Institute, it was called. Fifth night, you get to perform at a Manhattan Comedy Club. They gave you a DVD back then. And I figured that was it. The MC that night was Clayton. And he came up to me and he said, you aren't half bad. Would you like to perform next week at my show? So I immediately thought, you know, here's a one-way ticket to Hollywood. I'm going to be on Leno, Letterman, you name it. What I found over 2 years of performing very poorly was that my future was not meant to be on stage, but I was learning so many transferable skills, which I'll ask, you know, Clayton to address. But there are so many skills I learned as a comedian that I was immediately able to transfer to Peppercom. And then with Clayton's help, we began training our employees. Clayton?
Yeah, so the skills that we learned from doing comedy that are directly applicable to business are things like reading the room, redirecting a conversation when it's not going well, dealing with negative feedback or hecklers, as they're known in the comedy club space. Also, certainly, you know, very important, comedians learn how to be effective communicators and empathetic leaders. So what I mean by that is you're developing your personal charisma in a way that you're able to go on stage and tell the truth and show vulnerability and get people to care about you as a person and not just what you're babbling on about. So, you know, the material is never the star of the performance. The performer is. And so we try to apply that concept to whether it's presentation skills, internal, external communications, building a culture within an organization, and on down the line. There are just so many things that we comedians know that you business people have to learn.
Yes, and I would just add one other point. While I've always possessed some semblance of self-deprecating humor, Clayton really helped bring it out of me. And I do believe in terms of the overall skill set, and everything that Clayton mentioned is critically important, but a leader who does not possess self-deprecating humor, in my opinion, is only going to go so far. David, we spoke earlier about leaders who lead by fear. I'm the polar opposite of that. And I'm the first one to admit my faults, my foibles. And I encourage my employees, my clients, the fruit stand vendor to laugh along with me. I think that's really important.
Yeah, you know, on that note, and gosh, all of these skills are so important. And Clayton, as you were talking, I'm thinking back to Steve. Much like yourself, I dabbled in a performance art. For me, it was magic back in my early days. And again, it was not like don't quit your day job. It was like you better find a day job. You know, that kind of thing. But so many transferable skills in terms of working with people. Absolutely. So I want to dive into some of these, but I want to come back, Steve, to what you just were saying there about leading and admitting your own foibles and that sort of thing, because there's so much, you know, there's almost not a guest we have on this show talking about human-centered leadership who doesn't bring up trust, authenticity, vulnerability as vital leadership skills today. And you were going there through the lens of humor and self-deprecating humor. And I'd like to explore that a little bit more about, and from a comedy standpoint, Clayton, how we do that as leaders. Because I think it's one thing to talk about, we need to be vulnerable, we need to be transparent, we need to be authentic. Okay, those are big words. How do I do that?
I'll take the first pass at that. Some are born to it, some learn it. I learned it. I learned, as I wove my way through various global PR firms, I saw the very best and the very worst in leadership. So I saw those that, again, we talked about managed by fear or were passive aggressive managers, gossiping managers, leaders, et cetera. So when I started Peppercom, I really did my best to transplant the good and jettison the bad. And, as I said, I've always possessed, some self-deprecating humor, but the empathy and the vulnerability is, I think, the most important, because when you're up there on stage and you're performing, you're naked. It's you and the audience, and they've paid, $25, two drink minimum. And I feel obligated. I've got to do the best I can, which led to my coining my personal motto, expect less. And I've always delivered on that, David. I've always kept the bar right where it is. So I like to display, I think it's a strength to display your vulnerability. I think it's a strength to say, I don't know, but I'll find out and get back to you. I think it's a strength to say, this may not be a good idea, but I'd like to at least share it with you. So I am the opposite of top-down authoritarian leadership. I never liked it when I experienced it, and I certainly don't try to practice it at Peppercom. Clayton?
Well, there's an element of trust, I think, that has to happen, from a entertainment standpoint. Okay, so I'm in the comedy club almost every night. There's an element of trust between the audience and me, which is they're expecting me to tell the truth, and I'm expecting them to give me a chance. And so when that trust is broken, either by me trying to hide the truth from them or from them maybe being too drunk to give me a chance, that's when the performance goes south quickly. So if you translate, kind of this metaphor into the office, what we've learned is that when leaders are willing to trust their people and say, look, I'm even by the act of trying to make a little bit of a self-deprecating joke. And by the way, our book is filled with examples, mostly of times when Steve was admitting that he didn't have all the answers, or that, you know, we're not particularly good at technology, or, you know, whatever the case may be. It's the same skills that comedians use to try to win an audience over. It's they're showing. You don't want to go up on stage, for example, and say, my life is perfect. You know, I'm a multi-billionaire. After the show, I'm going to get into my Rolls Royce with my supermodel wife. Everybody's just going to say, you know, yeah, we don't want to have anything to do with you. As soon as you get up there and say, look, I got a problem, that's when people say, I want to hear what this person has to say, because that's the kind of stuff that we can all relate to. So it maybe in the old days, leaders had to pretend that they were omniscient and omnipotent. But nowadays they say, well, you know, there's a problem, and I'm going to be honest about what it is and what we're doing to try to fix it. And I think when you do that, people start to be more drawn to you, and they trust you back. And that's the way you build quality teams and a quality culture overall.
And courageous cultures, we talk a lot about that in terms of inviting people into that solution area, right? So, gosh, if I have to pretend that I have all the answers and am omniscient and all powerful and know everything there is to know, that's a lot of pressure. And in today's world, A, that's impossible. I don't know if it was ever possible, but it's certainly not possible in today's complex business world. So why put that pressure on ourselves and invite people in? Like, get 5 or 10 or 25 people working on that problem, not just you.
Yeah, I think one of the many things that Clayton has done for Peppercom is to transform our thinking from a yes, but mindset to a yes, and mindset. And I'll ask Clayton to explain the difference between the two. The audience probably already knows that, but Clayton, do you mind?
Yeah, sure. So what Steve's delving into now is what we call improvisational comedy. And improvisational comedy is when you build a scene through, as a team, through just, you know, off the cuff, ad lib, right? So the only way it ever works is if when someone comes up with an idea and takes that risk of saying, let's go to the zoo, right? For example, that the other people have to say yes. So accept the idea, like, yes, we're going to the zoo, all right, right away. Not just, oh, we can't afford to go to the zoo, or, you know, HR wouldn't like us going to the zoo, or there can't be any barriers. You have to just say yes. And how are we going to make that happen? And how are we going to build on that? So the key skills of improvisational comedy are acceptance, building, active listening, and storytelling. And we couldn't help but notice that these are kind of some of the same exact skills that are necessary in effective brainstorming and, you know, corporate content development, if you will. If we're all just arguing about what direction we're supposed to go in, and like, no, let's not go to the zoo, let's go to Mars instead, or no, let's do it about this. If everyone is kind of pulling in different directions, you cannot and will not ever get anything done. So what we learn from improvisational teams in the comedy space is that the first idea is the best idea, and we're going to build on that together before we get to the part where we say, well, it's not in the budget. That can come later, but for now, let's explore.
I was going to say, David, yes and has become arguably our tagline at Peppercom. You can overhear a conversation, you'll see it on our Teams channels. We're all yes ending each other. So it drives innovation, creativity, friendships. I mean, all the key soft and hard skills that a successful business needs. So yes and has been a very powerful learning experience for my firm.
It reminds me a bit too of what you were saying earlier about with the power of affirmations and what we're telling ourselves, because our brains, and it's such a important leadership principle, our brains find what we're looking for. So if we're looking for barriers, constraints, problems, reasons we can't do, all of those sorts, we're going to find them. There are plenty of them out there. We can find 1,000 of those all the time. So when we start looking for, okay, what is possible? What might work? What can we do? It doesn't mean it's going to, doesn't mean we're committing to doing all of it, but it lets us start creating.
Right. And it's really not about where you start. It's really about where you end up. So if you have a group together and you're saying, you know, the client wants A, B, and C, and then somebody throws out an idea, maybe that idea doesn't end up even resembling the finished product. But the key is, and comedians know this, the key is the process of going step by step by step towards eventually reaching the desired outcome. And if you shoot it down too early and start saying no, or another way to say no, as Steve already mentioned, is yes, but equals no. That's just no, okay? So don't ever say yes, but. You want to say yes and try to build it up and see where it ends up taking you. And it really doesn't matter where you started. It's really about where you end up. And the only way to get there is by going through the process. There are no shortcuts when it comes to effective brainstorming.
Yes, yes, and we bring yes and into our client discussions, whether we're going through the past month's results, whether there's a new product that we want to talk about. We will workshop an idea by going around the table with our clients and our team, yes ending each other until we end up with what we think is a great idea for a campaign.
And I'm wondering, as you're doing that, have you previously established criteria in terms of, all right, before we start coming up with ideas and so on, do you independently prior to that establish some criteria like, hey, here's what the client needs in terms of what a successful outcome or a successful idea is going to achieve? So we need to tick these boxes in terms of end product of what it's going to do for the client. Now let's start. So you have something to measure against once you finally get there?
Yes. And with the advent of AI, it's doing all that homework in advance, checking and getting what ChatGPT and the others can provide to you. And then because we've got so many longstanding client relationships, they're ready to yes end with us with at that point in time. But first we have to understand what are they asking us to do? What are our initial thoughts? Let's go into that client conference room. Let's yes end with them to arrive at an even better idea than we may have thought of on the way over.
Love it. Our 18-year-old is the captain of the All County Improv Team, his high school improv team, runs a fundraising improv show. So I have learned so much about improv from him and love everything you're telling me here. This is fantastic. Our guests today, Steve Cody and Clayton Fletcher, their book is The ROI of LOL, How Laughter Breaks Down Walls, Drives Compelling Storytelling, and Creates a Healthy Workplace. And we've been having a great conversation about some of the skills and approaches that that comedians and comedy can bring to the workplace, helping power results and power our people and so on. So we've been talking about improv, and I know in the book that you talk about other aspects of comedy too. So there's improv is one form of comedy, then there's stand-up and there's sketch, and you have whole sections about how each of those relate to the business world. So let's go with stand-up. I think that's a form of comedy everybody is fairly familiar with. And you know, you mentioned things like reading the room, responding to hecklers, and by the way, I'm just picturing a business meeting where I'm doing a presentation and somebody's like, get off the stage, you bum, you know, like haven't had that happen, but boy, I have been heckled. So maybe we start there. Let's go to some of these different skills that stand-ups can help our business leaders with.
Well, yeah,
that's exactly it, David. There are so many skills. And the one that I've become most comfortable with is the reaction I get from most audiences, and that's silence. And when I was first met with silence, when I was performing stand-up, I was a deer in the headlights. And then Clayton, who was coaching me all through that initial period, said, you can turn this around. You can use silence as a very powerful weapon. And so what I started doing on stage and what I start to do and start I've been doing for the last 8 or 9 years in new business meetings is whether an audience in a comedy club is greeting me with a profound silence or our big idea at a new business presentation is also met with profound silence. I say, I know why you're keeping silent. You're thinking to yourself, what a great idea or what a funny joke. I can't wait to tell my friends or my colleagues. That immediately transforms the chemistry, whether it's a comedy show or whether it's a conference room. It changes the dynamics. So silence is my number one friend. Clayton?
So dealing with hecklers, right? When you're doing a business presentation, you're not expecting somebody to say, boo, get off the stage, you bum. You know, that's not going to happen. But what does need to happen is that the presentation should become a dialogue between the speaker and the audience. So what we're looking for is not necessarily, you know, laughter or heckling, but what kind of feedback am I getting? Are they looking at me? Are their arms crossed? Are they on their phones, you know, checking their emails and not really paying attention? And there are times when you won't necessarily be heckled, but somebody will call something out, you know, where you say something as part of your presentation and maybe somebody in the audience that says, well, that wouldn't work out here, or something like that. And maybe some of the others in the room will know what that person in the crowd is referring to and laugh about that. So it's not heckling in the same way that I get it at midnight at the comedy clubs in New York City, but it is a bit of feedback. And what's important about feedback of any kind is that it's valuable, and you need to learn how to respond to the feedback you're either getting or not getting. If I see people and they're smiling at me, they're nodding their heads, I know that what I'm saying is landing. If they're looking at me skeptically or tapping their pencils on their desk, or, you know, you learn to look for these little cues that let you know whether you're on the right track or not. And sometimes as a performer, if the performance isn't going the way I want it to, I will literally change course. I'll either abandon the material altogether. I'll go into my heckler material where I deal with, you know, how I handle when someone's talking to me, or I go into my, what I call my bombing material, which is what I do when the audience doesn't think I'm funny. I actually make jokes about how they're not enjoying what I'm doing. And so we kind of take all of these ideas that all comedians have these tools in our pockets. And what we do at Peppercom and with all of our clients is we teach them how to apply those same skills to their work, whether they're, you know, if we're doing media training, we're teaching them how to speak to reporters, and you can tell whether the reporter is buying what you're selling or not. How can you change on a dime and switch it up, a pivot, as you business people love to say so much, to get it going in the direction that's going to be you know, more positive for everyone involved?
I thought we banned the word pivot after the pandemic.
It's banned at Peppercom. I guess Clayton didn't get the email.
All right. Well, that's all right.
You got to pivot. Yeah, pivot.
I want to call attention to a couple of things that both of you just said. There's so much richness in this. So let's start with this notion of silence, Steve, that you were talking about. And this goes to some of the responses, Clayton, that you were sharing as well, is that when, as a leader, you are facing the silence, the negative comment, where does that tension come from? I'm thinking the tension comes from everybody is watching, saying, how are they going to handle this? And can I trust this leader with my self, with my opinions, with my being? And so, Steve, when you're making that joke about, you know, and cutting the tension with the, hey, I know what you're thinking. Here, this joke was so good. This idea is so great. Can't wait to go home. Like, you're telling the audience, you can trust me. I can handle your disapproval. I've got enough confidence in myself and what I'm doing, and that you can trust me, is part of what it seems like the subtext of is in that response. And I'm wondering, am I on track? So that's my first question. Then if I am, what are some of the other ways? Clayton, I'd love to go even a little bit deeper with you about some of those kinds of responses that leaders might use. What do you encourage? So we can get to like a practical how-to on this one. I think it's a really rich conversation.
But very, very quickly, and then I'll let Clayton weigh in. It's not just trust for our junior level people in particular. It's confidence, because, you know, as you know, there are countless statistics that show people would rather die than deliver a public, you know, speech. Right. I don't know if that's true or not, but those are the stats. So many of our young people are really, you know, just scared out of their minds at the thought of presenting in front of a Fortune 500 C-suite. If we can get them performing on stage, I wouldn't say it's a walk in the park, you know, making a presentation to a Fortune 500 C-suite, but they feel so much more confident in their ability to project, to read, to pace themselves. If they do get a laugh, and obviously we deal with many, many difficult and serious subjects, so laughter isn't always appropriate in these new business meetings, but you can tell when someone's reacting with their verbals and nonverbals. So those are the intangibles that Clayton helps train our people and our clients' people.
Yeah, so it's really about humanization. You know, when someone's receiving a presentation or any sort of, you know, if you're in some kind of meeting, it's easy to forget that the person on stage is not a robot. It's not AI. It's a human being with thoughts, feelings, opinions. And so as comedians, we learn to humanize ourselves. And so, you know, getting to your question, David, about silence and why silence is important and where the tension comes from, you know, with any type of question that you ask, any kind of statement you make, in the back of your mind, there's always an expected reaction, right? Like I tell you, hey, great news. She said, yes, I'm getting married next week. I'm expecting you to say, hey, man, congratulations. Shake my hand. You know, let me take you out to celebrate, right? And so if I were to say to you, for example, hey, she said, yes, I'm getting married next week, and you just stared at me, then I would feel like there's something wrong between you and me. So I didn't get the reaction I expected. I got a very different one. And then I need to deal with that. And what I'm going to do in that case is, hey, didn't you hear what I said? Like, I'm showing you my emotions right now. It's really about sharing emotions. A lot of business leaders we deal with are good at sharing facts, figures, and statistics, and charts, and graphs, and every other kind of spreadsheet, but they're not good at sharing their emotions. And what the best leaders are good at is, sure, charts, graphs, facts, figures, numbers, that's all very important, but really just being human. And that means sharing emotion and trusting somebody else to meet you halfway with that emotion. And now we're dealing with each other on a human level. And so comedians know this. If I hit my big punchline and I'm expecting that big laugh and I don't get it, I will reveal to the audience in a funny way that hurt. You know, I might say something like, wow, when you guys get quiet, you do it as a group. And I respect the fact that it's unanimous. If one person thinks, you know, I'll kind of just have fun with the fact that there's dead silence in the room. And what that does is let them know, as Steve was saying about his line, I know what you're thinking. You can't wait to implement our great idea. Well, what the comedian is doing in that same scenario is trying to say, hey, hello, real live human being over here. You know, maybe if they start to see me as a person, they'll give my material another chance. And if that doesn't work, we're just going to improvise and wait for them to tell us to get off stage.
Well, there's a reason why Clayton is referred to as being robotic. Kidding.
Well, on that note, I want to, if I can, treat roboticism with a serious note for a moment, because I do, with our clients and in these conversations around, you know, humanizing yourself and extending the emotion and so on, there are certain people who find that challenging or difficult. And I'm wondering if anybody's listening going, you know, Clayton, Steve, I hear what you're saying, and I get intellectually what you're saying. I know I'll be more connected, but boy, I struggle to do that. Like, I even think of myself and in some of my relationships in terms of my expressiveness. I have, if my expression range is a 1 to 15, and I've got other people in my team, their expression range is a 1 to 150. And they don't feel I'm expressing at the level I'm expressing, you know, that kind of thing. Like, how do you coach or encourage leaders to share that emotion with other people in a way that works for them, if that's a struggle for them?
Number one,
I'm sorry, Clayton. I promise I'll make it brief. It's about being your authentic self. I hate that expression, but you don't have to be the funniest person in the room. You don't have to make people laugh out loud funny. Rather. It's about, you know, having that important conversation and that important connection. We're not trying to create America's next great comedian. We're trying to help people with their interpersonal communications and leadership skills. And when I say leadership, I'm talking about leading up, down, and across the organization. So this works for a 22-year-old or a 92-year-old. Not that I think we've trained any, is it nanogenarians? Is that what a 90?
As you can see, David, we were both really eager to answer this question, because this one really hits home with what the ROI of LOL is all about. I mean, one reason we wrote this book is because we saw a trend towards, you know, leaders kind of treating their job almost like a totalitarian government, like they're dictatorial in their styles. And what we've learned is that if you really want to attract and retain the best and brightest, you've got to be someone that people can actually relate to. And so a big part of that, David, is really just being truthful. So if you say that your dynamic range of your emotional fullness is between 1 and 15, and one of your coworkers is between 1 and 150, okay, that's fine. I'm not going to ask you to pretend that you are that coworker. I'm just going to find out within your own personal comfort zone, how much of your truth are you comfortable sharing at work. I mean, we obviously there are things we're not going to talk about at the office, and there are feelings we have that we're not going to share with our coworkers or with our clients or with the media, God forbid. But there are things that we can share that humanize us. And this is really about building relationships beyond just, you know, what's the weather like today? Or did the Yankees win last night? This is really about getting to know each other and how we feel about different things. You know, just as I'm talking, examples from our workplace come to mind immediately. You know, like everyone knows that Steve has to take New Jersey Transit when he comes into the office. And a lot of his stand-up and a lot of his comedy in general is about New Jersey Transit and how unreliable that form of transportation is. You know, other things that we joke about are just, as I already touched on briefly, we don't exactly excel at technology. You know, I'm happy that we got the Zoom call working today so that I would be able to join for this podcast, because that's not always the case. But we just embrace it, warts and all. You know, this is who I am. And as much as we hate the expression, your authentic self, there is something to that where it's really about just being honest and being truthful and being comfortable sharing, you know, your own personal vulnerability and honesty and authenticity in the workplace in an appropriate way and one that resonates with your target audience, whoever that may be.
You just were hearing from Clayton Fletcher, co-author with Steve Cody of the ROI of LOL, How Laughter Breaks Down Walls, Drives Compelling Storytelling, and Creates a Healthy Workplace. Steve, Clayton, as we are talking about all of these issues, you were mentioning in this prior segment about feedback that you get. And as you're watching the room and hearing, and people are, let's say this is presentations that we were specifically talking about, but this goes to a range of different leadership experiences. We get feedback all the time as people are responding to whatever it is that we're doing. And one of the things that struck me when you were talking, I think Clayton, it was talking, you were mentioning you're watching people's reactions. Are they tapping? Are they smiling and nodding? Are they looking at their phone? And one of the things that makes that difficult is I think we tend to interpret that feedback as being about us. And we take it personally. It's never intended personally, but we take it personally, right? I shouldn't say never. I mean, sometimes there is that person who really is. But most of the time, that's not the case, right? The feedback has something to tell us in terms of how what we're doing is landing, the impact it's having. I think my question here goes to, as performers, how do the most effective comedians, performers, and then ultimately leaders create the separation necessary to get the value from that feedback without letting it crush them in the process?
This is a great question, David. It's really about, you want to take your job seriously, but you don't want to take yourself too seriously. So if you're getting feedback that you didn't want, don't let it crush your soul. Don't let that negative feedback or that undesired or unexpected negative reaction ruin your life in that moment. And this is what we see a lot. You know, people are so caught up in, you know, on the day of a big meeting or, you know, just a big, like even when I'm going to do one of our comedy training sessions for one of our clients, you know, I get up that morning and I say, man, I hope they love me, you know, and I do. That's the truth. I want them to love me. I want them to say, we want you to do this for us every single day. It was so valuable and we learned so much from you. And the fact that I care about the outcome is what makes me feel nervous in the first place. Every time in your life when you felt nervous, it's because you cared about the outcome, whether it was the day you took the SAT or had your big job interview, or I don't care what it was. The times when you're most nervous are the times when the outcome matters. So what we do is take the idea of being nervous and flip it on its head. Okay. So some people say, oh, don't get nervous. You have a big speech today. Don't get nervous. I tell everybody, yeah, be nervous and let the audience know that you care. And when you humanize yourself in that way. And so maybe I say, you know, when I came here today, I was really hoping that the guy who sits right in the front row would be on his phone throughout my entire session. That's what I envisioned last night when I went to sleep. And now it's my dreams are coming true, you know? And I do that in a fun, loving way, not in a, you jerk, how can you be on the phone while I'm busy, you know, trying to do my job. There's a huge difference there, and you have to find that the work is important, but I don't take myself too seriously. And so just having fun with what's going on and the way things never turn out the way we expect them to.
And if I can just heckle and break in, obviously, you know, this is not something that can be forced on anyone. You can't force someone, you know, to embrace his or her nervousness. There are certain leaders and there are certain cultures and there are certain organizations where this wouldn't stand a chance of taking root. I don't want to say waste our time, but we know pretty early on in a conversation or a meeting, if we're aligned with a client organization or in a new business, in a new employee interview, we know pretty early on in the conversation if he or she is going to be a good fit with our culture. So we're not able to do this with a magic wand and all of a sudden everybody's, you know, embracing their inner nervousness. It doesn't always work that way. I mean, we're all different.
And once again, knowing your audience, reading the room, knowing who you're talking to and what's appropriate when, you know, that brings up a question of as we're talking about humor and comedy and so forth, what are, if you had to pick one or two kind of glaring moments that you see leaders get humor wrong or use it maybe in the wrong way or some mistakes to avoid, what would be some of the things that are kind of glaring, like as we're talking about this? We definitely don't want to do that, as we're looking for the things we do want to do.
Well, it's very easy to say, think before you speak and, you know, reread your email before you hit send. But the mistakes that I see from Fortune 500 companies, et cetera, are CEOs who thought they were being funny, but their version of funny was not what the workplace population felt was funny. I won't name the name of the organization or the CEO, but she made a very unfortunate comment in a town hall meeting in front of, I don't know how many people, tens of thousands of people, saying no one's getting a bonus. And if you don't like it, go in your crying room now and come back. And she was smiling, thinking that was funny. And she was absolutely crucified on social media.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it really comes down to put down humor is dangerous. So we talk about this form of comedy in the book, which is put down, which is like, you know, if you ever see like the Friars Club roast of Justin Bieber or Wild and Out on MTV and different kinds of entertainment where the idea is somebody's getting destroyed and eviscerated, right? And it can be fun to watch, but what makes it work is when we are what we call punching up. So it's the, you know, the people speaking against the king, not the king speaking against the people. And so you have to really be careful, like, who is the target of my joke? In comedy, there's an expression called kick the dog. Let me know who the bad guy is. And so if you set things up correctly, then we can have some fun. You notice that when they do a roast, it's always someone who is wildly successful and usually incredibly wealthy and is in on the joke. So you don't want to make a joke about somebody who might not be in on the joke. And I know Steve has some great examples of times when that happened at Peppercom, where, because we have such a culture of comedy at the workplace, there have been times that we'll admit readily that it does go wrong sometimes. Usually in those instances, it's because the target of the joke, which was someone that we thought would have had a great sense of humor, wasn't laughing. And so when that happens, it's kind of a disaster. We need to abandon ship, as they say.
They weren't ready for it. They weren't in on it.
Right.
All right. Once again, we're talking with Steve Cody, Clayton Fletcher, authors of The ROI of LOL. And we've been talking about how strategic humor can transform your business. And there's one more kind of comedy that I want to ask you about before we're able to have to wrap up here for time. But before we do, love this book, love your work. Where can our listeners learn more about you? Any resources you might have? Where should we go to connect and get more information?
We have a website, as you might expect, www.roilol.com. That will give you a better handle on the book, a little bit more about us, some videos of us, some of the reviews about the book. I'm reachable 5 days a week, sometimes seven, at Peppercom, which is two P's and two M's, peppercom.com. steve.cody@peppercom.com. Clayton?
Yeah, so ROILOL.com. We have a different link for single orders versus bulk orders, and you can get discounts and learn more about the book in that way. We definitely want you to find us on LinkedIn. We're both on LinkedIn. I'm Clayton Fletcher. He is Steve Cody. I'm on everything else at Clayton Comic on Twitter or, you know, Instagram, wherever else you might engage in social media and things like that. And yeah, we would love to hear from anyone. Our book, we're very proud. It debuted at number one on Amazon's business and etiquette chart. So that made us very happy. And we're, you know, accumulating good reviews and people really seem to like it. It only has been out for just over a month now. And we're very excited about the book. Yeah,
it was very surprising because no one who knows me would ever associate me with business etiquette.
Oh, those Amazon categories, right? That's good. That's good. All right. So I hope you will connect with Steve and Clayton. I know that I will be connecting on LinkedIn following our show, and definitely encourage you to get a copy of the ROI of LOL. Lots of good practical things. We haven't even dove in halfway through this book, but the last thing we're going to have time for today is we have talked about the role of improvisational comedy and how that can help our teams. We've talked about the skills that stand-up comics can help leaders in their work. You talk about a third type of comedy, sketch comedy, where my brain goes is Saturday Night Live. I don't know if that's sketch comedy. I know you're going to educate us, but sketch comedy, what is it? And again, what are some of these transferable principles?
Sure. So sketch comedy is, Saturday Night Live is the best living example. 50 years now it's been on the air. It's little vignettes, little skits, sketches as they're called, where the performers are sometimes actors, they're sometimes comedians, they're sometimes neither. But the idea is we're going to tell a short story with a beginning, middle, and end. So we have an exposition, a complication, and a resolution. And that little skit has a thesis. So what we're trying to get the audience to understand, preferably in a comedic way, but not necessarily. Sometimes a sketch can be not funny at all, but it's just a demonstration. One example might be traditional workplace harassment videos from the 1980s and 90s, where you would just see the right way to do it and the wrong way to do it. You know, should I come and give my coworker a massage when she's not expecting it at work? Right. So they would show you that. It's not necessarily funny, although it might have been unintentionally funny at the time. But it's a little scene where the point of the scene is to get me to think differently or to see something in another way. And so obviously we use this for external communication. You see companies use this. Most television commercials nowadays are actually sketch comedy, where a scene is set very quickly. You know where we are, what's going on, and then what happens. And then the idea is, you know, buy my widgets, whatever. But we also use it in our corporate communications. So, for example, a lot of different industries, they'll have like some huge annual event where every company is going to present, you know, tell us a little bit about your company in a 3-minute video. And that video is usually stale and dull and boring. And it's just a man in a suit saying, we are working on the 23rd floor of 360 West 49th Street. You know, it's just, it's so horrible. So what we'll do is try to take that idea and turn it into a comedy sketch. Maybe, you know, look at something from another angle, try to make it funny and more entertaining, because we know if we can make you laugh while we're telling the story of our company, we're also going to keep your attention in a way that those boring, dull videos never could.
Yes, and final point, we practice what we preach. So over the years, we have created some amazingly funny holiday videos. We did another tremendous one about our 15th anniversary. We work very closely with Clayton. Most of our employees appear in the videos, and the kind of reaction we get is just absolutely amazing. And for us, it's a huge differentiator. You know, most public relations firms, we work in a sea of sameness, but no other PR firm can lay claim to having a comedy infused culture like Peppercom. So it works for us.
So it sounds like the sketch comedy of the three, the stand-up has the skills, the improv is a process, a way of being. Sketch sounds like it's more deliberative, takes a little bit more planning, effort, and really intentional use to leverage for a leader to get the most out of that.
Absolutely. And you know what, David? That's very well said. But I want to say also that there are overlaps among the three different forms, right? So if you're good at stand-up, you've learned about what makes you individually funny. You can apply that sense of humor to improv and sketch. And a lot of sketch comedy actually starts with improv. Why don't we improvise a scene about cavemen that don't know anything about insurance, right? And then the next thing I know, I have a full script for the commercial, right? So it can start with improv and eventually lead us to, you know, the scripted word. But the biggest difference between improv and sketch comedy is the script. A sketch is actually scripted and improv is not.
Right. And we'll sometimes employ all three to help a client organization. We just did almost a full day with a major bank. And they had four different groups, internal, external, social, special events, four different sets of messaging. Nobody understood what the other person was saying. No collaboration, no cooperation. We started with stand-up. Then we got them doing teamwork in yes-and exercise. Then we had them do sketch comedy. And when they left, they were all on the same page in terms of here's how we describe ourselves in 60 seconds, 30 seconds, and 10 seconds. And that's a win for us and for the client organization.
Absolutely. That's a win for any organization. 100%. All right. Well, we are coming to the end of our time. I want to ask each of you if you could share a final thought and encouragement, and I'll leave the door open to whatever. But one of the things that I am thinking about, maybe you can do two, one for this person and then one for just general. The person who's listening to us going, guys, I get it. I love it, but I'm just not funny. And I want to be, but I hear what you're saying and I love it, but I struggle with that. And I don't feel like I have a sense of humor, or at least the people around me never laugh at what anything I have to say. So where do I begin? What do I do?
I would say, again, don't be too harsh on yourself. It's not about being funny in the workplace. It's about using all of the skills that comedians know intrinsically, instinctively, and transferring them to the workplace. And you can be short, crisp, clear, concise, unexpected. Unexpected storytelling is highly valued, as you know. So you do not have to be laugh out loud funny. Don't worry about it. It's actually a non-issue for most of the clients we and most of the Peppercom employees, and especially me. I'm certainly not funny.
Yeah, Steve is obviously the king of self-deprecating humor, but I can tell you he's way funnier than he's letting on. When he does take the stand-up comedy stage, which is admittedly a rare occasion nowadays, but you know, he always does very well. The audiences really love him because he is so open and vulnerable and self-deprecating. It's good to be able to laugh at yourself, so that's a good place to start. You know, it's interesting, David, everybody, if you told someone I want to learn to be an opera singer, they would say, oh, well, you should, you know, study opera singing. If you said you wanted to be an actor, they'd say, oh, you should take a class in acting. But for some reason, I'll never understand, people think that comedy can't be taught. And if you think you're, you know, just a decidedly unfunny person, there's a great chance that I won't be able to get you to where you are headlining at a major comedy club in New York City on a Saturday night. But you can still learn a few tricks of the trade and tools, and just so that you can understand when someone is funny, what's making that person funny. And also, as Steve already mentioned, it's not about, you know, we're not booking like a Netflix comedy special or something here. It's really about getting outside your comfort zone and learning about the skills that comedians use for their purposes that you can use for your very different purposes. No one gets an award for getting big laughs at the office, but laughing together can really help create a healthy workplace culture. And that's what it's really about at the end of the day.
It's such a good final word. Laughing together can create such a healthy workplace culture. The trust, the openness, and authenticity that we've been tossing that word around, that vulnerability and the connection with one another. Steve Cody, Clayton Fletcher, authors of ROI, of LOL, How Laughter Breaks Down Walls, Drives Compelling Storytelling, and Creates a Healthy Workplace. This has been a wonderful conversation. It has been personally beneficial for me, and I'm confident it has been helpful for our listeners, and a great way to kick off season 15 here. Thank you so much for being guests today.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
It's been our pleasure. All right, listeners, well, there you go. Strategic humor can transform your business. I hope you'll check out the ROI of LOL and implement some of these specific skills to help you be the leader you want your boss to be. Until next time.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.